This is Shoulda Bet More with Will Hill, only on VSiN, the sports betting network.
Welcome to the Shoulda Bet More podcast presented by VSiN, the sports betting network. Coming up on the show, Jonathan Von Tobel, Pods of the Future, Money Moves will join us. We will go over a bunch. We'll do a little NFL. We'll do a little bit of college. We'll get his bets, futures, awards, all that stuff. But we will also get to LeBron James and the NBA. And, you know, for all of the people, and I'm guilty of this too, hey, make a decision. Nobody cares. Who cares anymore? I'll be honest. I did not think I was going to be this into his decision. I thought, yeah, probably go back to Cleveland. We'll do that again. Good team, not really contender. Okay, maybe he goes to Miami, but I thought Cleveland. And by the way, these prediction markets had no clue where he was going. Cleveland's the favorite. Miami's the favorite. Back and forth. Philly was fourth and a distant fourth. And by now, we know that LeBron James is a Philadelphia 76er. Just one of the weird uniforms you're ever going to see. You think of weird uniforms all the time. And I was going through this the other day with Dustin Sweetelson. I don't think we actually did it on the air, but just texting back and forth. You know, Joe Namath on the Rams, Manny Ramirez on the Tampa Bay Rays and the Chicago White Sox, too, for that matter. You know, Emmett Smith on the Cardinals, Mike Piazza on the Padres, even Clemens on the Blue Jays. I mean, you get the idea. Patrick Ewing on the Seattle Sonics, the Olajuwon on the Raptors. You just get some of these weird uniforms where it just doesn't look right. It doesn't feel right. You forget they're almost on the team. But I'm into this. I think it'll be fun. I don't know. Look, I don't think it's like a hand-in-glove fit. Him and Curry, if he went to Golden State, now this team is better than the Warriors team, so I get why he did it. Him and Curry from a basketball standpoint, the driving kick, kicking to an open Curry is just perfect from a basketball standpoint, a perfect fit. This is not that. Him going to Minnesota or even San Antonio, which he didn't want to be viewed as a ring chaser, although at this stage of his career, what do you want him to do? Go to the Nets? Of course he's going to go to a good team, and I wouldn't have held it against him. I don't think people should have held it against him if he went to a team like the Spurs, but he kind of played in the middle, and you can't call him a ring chaser for this move. The Sixers have not been to the conference finals. Forget winning the championship. Forget being in the finals. They've been in the conference finals in 25 years. This is not a ring chasing move, and this team was 20-1 before LeBron signs there. They moved down to 9-1. They're plus 380 to win the East, plus 200 to win the division, over under 50.5. Anytime you have a move like this, the time to bet them was beforehand, not after. I don't know if there's value on these numbers. But again, it's not, like I was saying, it's not a hand-in-glove fit, but LeBron's big. He can shoot. He can pass. He's smart enough to blend in anywhere. The problem from a fit standpoint, so it's a decent fit. The problem, though, a lot of these guys, he needs the ball. Jaylen Brown needs the ball. Maxey needs the ball. The old saying, but it's an old saying for a reason, there's only one basketball. And the other thing, too, and I think from an ego standpoint, these guys will all probably figure out a way to put their egos aside and make it work. But there's just not a lot of shooting. It's a lot of dribbling. And it's a lot of guys that need the ball. And I just don't know from that perspective if that's perfect. But there's a lot of talent. You figure Brown, Maxey, Edgecombe will play every night, which will give you a good regular season team. The problem you're going to run into, you're still going to be relying on Joel Embiid to basically, and I keep phrasing it this way, it's like hitting a five-leg parlay. You need him to be healthy through the regular season and then four rounds of the playoffs. At this age, I mean, he's 32, basically going on 52. He's so old. He's so injury-prone. And some of it in the past, you know, he got hit in the face or he got elbowed or, you know, he has Bell's palsy. Some of it's bad luck. But some of it in this past year was a case where he just can't move because the knee is an issue. And that knee, as you get older, is probably not going to get better unless, and this is not a crazy idea, LeBron comes in and says, hey, this is what I've been doing the last 20-something years. This is how I can take care of myself. This is how I condition. This is my diet. And you get Embiid to lose 20, 30 pounds, and you can keep him healthy and in shape for the long haul. I still think that is a long shot. And I think we're looking at the idea, and I don't know what's going to happen. I'd be very interested in trading for Anthony Davis. I know Davis is no beacon of health or reliability himself. And by the way, if you're a Lakers fan, you say, man, LeBron, you took this pay cut. Where was this pay cut the last 3 or 4 years? First of all, you could have just stayed with us. You have Kessler, you have Luka, you got, you know, Reeves and Doncic. You got a nice team here. Why didn't you just take a pay cut all of these years? Why didn't you take a pay cut now? Besides that, this is a situation where I think Davis just fits better, just has, first off, he can run a little bit more. And while it's unlikely he's going to be healthy, we've at least seen him do it. He won a championship. He went to a conference finals in another year in 2023. And it's hard to tell. In the last couple of years for the Lakers, he was starting to shake the rep that he was injury prone. He was starting to be a little bit more reliable staying on the floor. He gets traded to Dallas. He gets hurt right away to make that trade for Luka look even worse from Dallas's perspective. It's hard to tell the last couple of years how much of this he's actually been hurt and how much of it, yeah, he's kind of hurt, but he's playing for teams that are tanking and we want him to sit out anyway. I just think he's not a great bet to stay healthy, as we know, but he's a better bet than Embiid to stay healthy. Now you have to throw in some picks, but the Wizards, and people will say, wow, why would you take Embiid's contract? If you're the Wizards, you're still in building mode. You're still in a situation where, you know, a couple of years from now, you expect DeBonza to be maybe an all-NBA player and you want to build around him. You want a couple extra picks for ammo to be able to trade for whatever, a star, more assets. You want those assets to be able to help DeBonza a couple years from now. You're not in compete mode. So getting the extra picks, I think, for the Wizards makes sense. And I think if you're Philly, I would rather have Anthony Davis than Embiid. I just trust him more, even though I don't trust him fully. And LeBron has been angling from all reports, and I don't think this came out of nowhere, to play with Anthony Davis. So I think that's a trade that makes some sense. I don't know what's going to happen, but putting your chips on the fact that Embiid needs to stay healthy and reliable through a regular season and four rounds of playoffs, it's asking a lot. And I don't think Philly's going to win the title. I don't even think that's the measurement for success. That's the bar. To me, they haven't been, like I said, conference finals in 25 years. That's the bar. If you make a conference finals and you know what, you lose a best of seven to the Knicks or the Celtics, or you bow out in the conference semis, you had a good year. Anything short of that is probably disappointing. Anything more than that, success. So I would list conference finals, which Embiid hasn't been to. They haven't been to since Iverson. That would be the line here, the bar of success. Over under 50.5. I actually think they'll go over. I know the East is very competitive. Embiid's going to miss games. LeBron's going to miss games. But I think you have enough on a night-to-night basis with the young guys, the Edgecombe, Maxey, Brown. Brown plays all the time. I think that's enough to go over the 50. So it should be fun. And I said this after the draft, I'll say it again. For the first time in a while, and look, I like the NBA playoffs. I'm not an NBA hater, but the NBA regular season has been awful, unwatchable for the last 5 or 6 years. Just become a bad product. The guys don't play a lot. There just doesn't seem to be a lot on the line. It's almost like an 82-game preseason. I think that changes this year. I think the draft has helped some of these bottom teams. You know, Caleb Wilson on the Bulls, DeBonza on the Wizards, even a team like the Kings have Acuff, and they got Caravan. There's a little more juice to the bottom teams. These teams aren't completely unwatchable. The anti-tanking rules, I think, are going to prevent teams from being completely unwatchable. There's going to be a little incentive to at least be respectable. And now you got some juicy, you got some rivalry. Sixers-Celtics are going to be fun games, assuming the guys play, which has been an issue. But Brown and Tatum clearly don't like each other, that aspect of it. LeBron back on the East. And it was weird when he went to the West when he was on the Lakers. But LeBron back in the East, where he's going to be playing against the Knicks. And he's going to be playing against the Celtics. These are going to be fun games. It's going to be a fun league for the first time in a while for a regular season. So we'll see if the players, you know, comply and take it seriously. But I think going into the season, this is the most fun the league has been from a regular season standpoint in a long, long time. I think the league is looking at a balanced league. You know, the Thunder and the Spurs are rightful favorites, the Knicks defending champions, but there's a lot of good teams and there's just not a lot of, you know, really unwatchable teams. I think the league is just going to be much more watchable night in, night out. Tuesday night in February, you're not going to have half the games or three quarters of the games be completely just unwatchable and names you don't recognize, teams you don't recognize. I think you're getting back on track from that standpoint. You know, LeBron, this is fourth time switching teams. You got to give him credit for this. I know people get sick of him. He's tired of hearing about him. He's a drama queen. He loves the attention. A lot of that is true. He's done a pretty good job of knowing when to get in, knowing when to get out. He leaves Cleveland. They had nothing around him the first time. Obviously, he didn't handle it well, the decision. I'm sure he regrets that. I think he's made the point. He's gone on record saying he regrets that. But pairing up with Wade in his prime, Bosh, he went there four years, made four finals, won two championships. That was the right move from a basketball standpoint. Getting out of Miami when Wade started to break down, that was the right move. Going back to Cleveland, where, you know what, we got the first overall pick. We got this guy. We got that guy. We make some maneuvers. We got Kyrie. I can win a championship there. Went to a bunch of finals, won a championship. Went to four straight finals and won a championship. Knowing when to leave Cleveland, said, all right, I got my championship. Maybe now it's time I go out. I'm going to go live in L.A. L.A.'s got a bunch of assets. We can trade them for Davis down the road or whoever to maybe win a championship there. He did. Now leaving the Lakers, I think this was the team. I don't think he would have won with Golden State. I think that would have been a real, real long shot. I mean, him and Curry would have been fun. Maybe you got Davis and you're annoying, you're tough to play. That team's not winning a championship. Cleveland's not a championship team even with him. These other teams, unless he wanted to go to the Spurs, none of these teams are really title contenders. This was probably his best chance to win a championship. So I think from that standpoint, he picked the right team. You could say he's got blood on his hands from the Westbrook move, which I think he was a part of. I'm sure he was a part of when he was with the Lakers. That probably cost the Lakers. It probably cost him another championship because that was a terrible move. It took assets to get him. It took assets to get off of him. That was around the time when Durant got traded a couple times and was unhappy. You could have maybe had enough to get Durant and have Davis, LeBron, Durant be your team. Instead, he hitched his wagon to Westbrook. It was a terrible move. But other than that, he's had a pretty good sense of timing. He's had a pretty good knack of when to get out and where to go. And I think this is a good decision from that standpoint in picking the right spot. And, you know, you're going to get him on the minimum. He's still probably one of the 20, 30 best players in the league. To get him to basically play for free is quite the bargain there. And the last thing on this, man, imagine back in late April, early May, telling someone the Sixers, who were down 3-1 to the Celtics, monster series underdogs, 10-1 underdogs before the series. They're down 3-1. They get blown out at home in game 4, and they're down double digits in the second half of game 5. So come back, win that series, then get Jaylen Brown, then add LeBron. It's been a wild, you know, 4 or 5 months here for the Sixers to go from winning that series to where they were when they're down 3-1, and really before the series, as big underdogs, to now where they are with Brown, with LeBron. Not like A-list contender, but probably on that next rung where if everything went right, a move here, a move there, you could squint and you could see a possible title team. But from a fun standpoint, an entertainment standpoint, an absolute home run. I'm excited to see it. I'm excited to watch it. And I'm excited to hear what Jonathan Von Tobel has to say. He will join us next. We'll go over this, his football bets. This is the Should Have Bet More podcast. Stay tuned on VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, we are back. Should Have Bet More podcast. You can catch in Money Moves, Pod to the Future, once in a while, Hardwood Handicappers, ESPN Las Vegas. He is everywhere, and he joins us now. JVT, JVT, appreciate you coming on, man. LeBron James, I don't know if you realize this, has a new team. How surprised were you? And, again, appreciate you coming on, and good to see you.
Yeah, I'm kind of surprised. You know, it's I didn't expect it to be Philly. You know, the one of the things that they kept bringing up was like basketball championship, all that kind of stuff. And, you know, I think they're going to be very good in Philadelphia. But you know, Stormy kept making fun of me because I kept saying if it's like true basketball fit and potential championship, I don't think there was a better basketball fit than Minnesota. Like he fits perfectly what they wanted to do. But look, they're going to be a really good team. That starting five is one of the better ones in the NBA. And I'm always a big proponent of they'll make it work in terms of these stars. You know, a lot of people like to say like, oh, there's only one basketball to go around, things like that. These are all high level IQ basketball players. They're going to be able to get it done. They're going to be able to figure it out. I'm going to be really interested to see actually, and we can go down this path, actually how Joel Embiid fits in all of this. As it's been pointed out, you've got the makings of like a really lethal transition team with four of the five, right? You got VJ Edgecombe, you got Tyrese Maxey, you got LeBron James, and you've got Jaylen Brown. Like that's a group that could really kill people if they wanted to get up and down the floor, but Embiid doesn't really fit in all that. But I think it makes some sense. I do wonder when and eventually if Kawhi Leonard joins the Toronto Raptors, where they truly do fit, those 76ers, that is, in the grand scheme of things. But they're going to be a good team, and they're going to have a chance to get into the NBA Finals, and I know that's LeBron's ultimate goal.
How surprised are you he picked the Sixers, and what does this say about the prediction markets where, man, nobody really saw this coming? I know there was a day or two where they were a minus favorite, but that was a long time ago. It went back and forth, toggled between the Heat, the Cavs. What's just your level of surprise and what the takeaway was here in terms of just how inefficient, I guess, the prediction market was?
Yeah, to me, that's the big takeaway, man. Like, you know, we talk about this all the time, Will, like, and it kind of bothers me to an extent, even though we're in the space, but so many people will use the betting market or prediction markets now as like the point of evidence for something's going to happen. And remember, this isn't the second time that this is the second time I should say that this has happened. If we all remember, Giannis Antetokounmpo was an odds on favorite to go to the Boston Celtics. You'll remember that. And he is a member of the Miami Heat. So I think that this is all just a big guessing game and nobody really knows exactly what's going on at all. And yet people will act like this actually does matter. And so I'm really going to push that forward in these information-based markets, I think, at least. Like, I don't believe people understand how inaccurate these things are. And I'm also a big proponent of like, look, stop acting like there's something nefarious going on. There's a lot of people that wanted to go, oh man, like this needs to be investigated. LeBron was moving markets and all that. He wasn't doing that. I think a lot of people got freaked out because of the Miami Heat YouTube link and they were just betting into the market. And it's fascinating to me that we saw movement on Golden State despite nothing in terms of evidence. We saw movement on Miami despite nothing in terms of evidence. And here we are. So I think it just goes to show that this is all just a big guessing game and nobody understands what exactly is going on with these guys.
All right, JVT, from a betting perspective, if you had to bet anything right now, it's hard. Like I'm generally optimistic on this with Philly, but I'm not going to advise, you know, betting plus 380 to win the East or bet to win the title. If you told me you bet it 4 or 5 days ago, yeah, there's value. But if you had to bet anything in the East right now, what would it be? My guess is you're going to say Toronto, but maybe that's, you know, maybe you're going to tell me different here.
Well, I mean, I would if I knew Kawhi was going to be there. I don't like fully believe that that's going to go through. I just don't know what's going to happen, you know? I think it's more than likely that that trade's going to happen, but I still think you should be reserved in playing on that just because there is a chance that Toronto balks and says no. Like, especially, Will, like, I don't think it's going to be this, but what if it's like a year suspension, you know? Like, Toronto wouldn't want any part of that. So I do think that there is that hesitancy. To be honest with you, you know, I'll get wrapped up in social media for a second because I just watched a video of him sweaty and shirtless working out. But I think it's Tyrese Haliburton and the Indiana Pacers. I mean, this team, when they were a different version of themselves, made it to the NBA Finals. And I think there's an argument to be made that they are better with Ivica Zubac. He offers versatility at center. He's a very good rim protector. They're going to be better defensively, and they're already a pretty good unit at that. Haliburton coming back and losing the weight looks absolutely tremendous coming off of the injury. So I think there's a chance that we're kind of focusing on Philly. We're focusing on New York, rightfully so, for the Knicks. We're focusing on Toronto, when the reality is the Eastern Conference champs from 2 years ago are getting their best player back and they've been improved and they've been quietly building in a down year. And I think that's something that we're really kind of missing out on. So if we were talking about the true value and playing a price, I think to me it's going to be Indiana. Because even for Philly too, to your point, like obviously everything's baked into it. They're going to be pretty short, but they've got bigger fish to fry. And I mean by that is like Joel Embiid's probably going to miss time in the regular season. LeBron James is probably going to miss time in the regular season. There's a pretty good shot in the peaks and valleys of an NBA year that you're going to be able to get a little bit more on the 76ers from a future standpoint. Not much, but maybe even a little bit more.
If you're Philly, and this has been thrown out there, would you think about Embiid, a couple of draft picks for Anthony Davis? And the Wizards, you know what? They're still building. DeBonsa, by the time you expect him to be what you hope he's going to be, 2-3 years from now, you're probably happy you have extra picks to use his ammo to trade for someone else or just use those picks. Embiid and picks for Davis. Does that framework make sense from Philly's perspective?
I think trading Joel Embiid makes sense. I don't know if it's for Anthony Davis. Like, okay, here's like one oft-injured center for, I guess, another that fits a little bit better than what we are, you know, because he can play in transition. He can get up and down the floor. He can play above the rim. So like that, I think, does make some sense in the basketball fit. But I just think that going back to what we talked about at the beginning, you know, fit-wise, Embiid's a really good player, and they're going to make it work. But I think he's kind of the odd man out in terms of the way that he likes to play basketball and the way that this team, when they're operating at their full peak, could look. And I think they were kind of flirting with that before they upended Boston in the postseason, right? I think that there was a chance that you were talking about Joel Embiid being moved just because they're building around Tyrese Maxey. I mean, the moves they made very clearly are moves like Jaylen Brown, he fits with Tyrese Maxey. You know, BJ Edgecombe fits with Tyrese Maxey. This is a team that I think understands that Maxey's their guy now moving forward. And so would you be willing to move off Embiid, not for Anthony Davis, but just move off him in general to get something else? Look, he's probably not going to. He's going to be a 76er, and they're going to run with Embiid here this year. But it is a two-year deal, and I do wonder that if in the second year LeBron James is playing with Joel Embiid or if it's somebody else there at that position.
This is the most excited for an NBA regular season I've been in a long time. I said it after the draft where some of these bad teams got better. You know, Caleb Wilson on the Bulls, there's at least some hope. Even a team like the Kings is not going to be any good. You got Acuff and you got Caravan. You know, the Wizards get DeBonsa. Now you throw in all this stuff with LeBron and Jaylen Brown on Philly, the rivalry with Boston, Knicks Sixers games. Do you agree this is the first time in how long here that we're going to have, I think, a really good, really juicy NBA regular season?
Yeah, I mean, you know, you're asking the wrong guy because I love the NBA regular season, as you know, but I'm with you in the sense of the excitement. I was thinking about this the other day. I was like, man, I kind of want the season to get here. You know, I want like a loaded Wednesday card with all of these games so I can watch all of these different iterations of these teams. Like, I want to see Paul George in a Boston Celtics uniform. I want to watch the Celtics and the 76ers play each other. I want to watch, Luka and this team of whites go at it with all of these other groups, right? Like, I want to see all of this. It's going to be tremendous. I want to see Minnesota. Like, I like the Timberwolves and what they've built, too. I want to see what Denver's going to do. So I'm with you. Like, this seems to be building up toward a regular season that's going to have a lot. And obviously, we talked about Kawhi and what that means for the Raptors if they're going to get him. So, Adam Silver, so I was at the press conference for Adam Silver during the NBA Summer League, and it was brought up to him by Vince Goodwill of ESPN about the second apron, and, you know, he brought up its intent and the fact that it's working the way that he wants. Look, you could say that these teams are getting dinged for drafting well, and they have to disperse their stars because they can't afford to pay them, but it's leading to this crazy era where the talent's getting spread out like an insane amount. 8 different champions in 8 different years. All of these teams now can beat each other, as we saw a couple months ago. There's no unbeatable team at this point. Like, all of these groups are tremendous. So I'm with you. Like, I cannot wait to see ultimately what's going to happen, and I can't wait to see it play out.
In this last minute or two, how about the teams that didn't get them? To me, Golden State's the one. It's like, man, what am I still doing with Curry? Maybe you've won enough. Yep. You've banked enough titles and memories where you say, you know what, we'll just ride out the last few years. If we make playing games, fine. If we don't, fine. What's your take on some of these teams, Golden State, for example, that missed out on them?
I'm with you. I mean, loyalty is overrated. And I think Steph Curry is, like, what he's doing, I commend him, but dude, get out of there. I don't know what's going on. Like, they just keep trying to hold on to the dying embers of what that franchise used to be when they were at the peak of their powers. There's no need for that anymore, man. Like, the time has passed. You guys are old. The roster isn't really built very well. There's not a lot of talent on it. That's young talent at the very least. I just think it's time to, if you're Steph Curry, because we deserve it, right? Like, it was incredible. There's two things that come to mind with Curry in recent years is obviously the run that he went on is so underrated when they beat the Celtics in the NBA Finals. Like, I don't think that's ever going to get enough in terms of what he did to bring that final title to them. And I will call it that final title for them, at least in that era. And the other is the gold medal game in the Olympics and just how good he is in high leverage spots. We deserve to watch that version of Steph Curry, and we're not getting it with this version of Golden State. They're going to be a play-in team again, and they're barely making it. I'm with you. Like, dude, just blow it up at this point. Ship them off and let's go.
Yeah, get some young picks, get some young players. You know what? Nobody's going to care 10 years from now that he played his last year or two on wherever. The Magic, yeah. The Hornets, whatever. Hornets. I mean, you pick the team. Just have him be relevant. Have him be a chance to be on a second-round team. We'll do more JVT coming up next. Should have bet more podcast. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network. All right, we're back. Should have bet more podcast. Jonathan Von Tobel, Money Moves. We will I'll move on to some football stuff in a minute. Last thing on basketball. Is Jokic the next domino? Is Jokic still on the Nuggets in 3 years from now? That's another team. I never thought he was going to Denver. That would have been fun. But some of these other teams, like, you got to look around and where the bar is at with OKC, with the Spurs. The East is now really good, which makes it fun. What do you think Jokic's future holds here?
Yeah, I think in 3 years, probably not. I mean, unless they're really going to start to try to like revamp this and try to go after some pieces here in the next coming years. But some of the big dominoes have already fallen, right? And they're signed through longer deals. So like Giannis is going to be in Miami for the foreseeable future. LeBron, obviously on a 2-year deal in Philadelphia, is not going to go anywhere and his career is going to end. You know, Jaylen Brown, they were sniffing around him, but he is going to be in Philly for the foreseeable future as well. You know, kind of going through some of the potential stars and whatnot. I mean, I don't know. Does Devin Booker eventually become available and they go after him and add him? I mean, that's like a piece that maybe works just because the timeline seems to be expired out there in Phoenix. You know, to the point of Curry, like we talked about, do they go and maybe get him? Crazy things happen, right? So I'm not going to say no, but they try to. It's funny. You go back to the year they won the NBA Finals and they were great. And that starting five was fantastic. And they decided that we're all good enough, much like Oklahoma City, what we built, that we're just going to continue to run this back, except we're going to change out like shooting guard and we're going to change out small forward. And clearly it's just not good enough. Like, they need more around Nikola Jokic. And I think he's finally, because I think what you're alluding to here is his willingness to kind of push the extension back and go like, we'll see. Like, I'll talk about signing my extension maybe a little bit later, because he can sign it if he wants to. And I think he's kind of realizing too, like, kind of want to win basketball games. Like, I know it's a bit that I sit there and say that I don't want to win a championship, or I don't care about basketball as much as I care about like horse racing. But I think he understands how good he is and the potential to win a title. But that team needs to be better, because right now they're nowhere near some of their contemporaries in the Western Conference. And that doesn't even include, obviously, getting to the finals and then beating whoever comes out of the East.
Anything you've played NBA, futures, awards, over-under for wins? I know the Jazz, man. That is going to be the decent team this coming year. And I was surprised, 35.5. I was doing the show with Femi Bebefe a couple weeks ago, and he's like, man, I could see them being a 3 seed. Like, really? A 3 seed? That might be a little ambitious, but I don't know. Give us a little rundown of the account, what you've bet so far, what you're looking to bet.
Yeah, so Jazz 150-1 to win the Western Conference. That's been cut down to like 100-1 or so. But yeah, I've got the Jazz to win the Western Conference there. Over that win total, I'm with you. Did it open 34.5, if I remember correctly, at some spots. It's up to like 36.5, still playable there, I think, to get over the win total for the Utah Jazz. I'll say this. I didn't love that they shipped off Walker Kessler. So like the center position right now is a rotation of Yusuf Nurkic and Jackson Hayes. So like that kind of leaves a lot to be desired, but every other position is stacked and they're super talented. So I think that they're going to be a really big problem and very well coached. Will Hardy's a really good coach. So anything positive Jazz I'm in on. You'll like this. You know, you like these long shots. I put in a 10,000-1 NBA Finals exact matchup of Hornets Jazz. So that's going to be a ton of fun to see if we could get that home. Crazier things have happened. And as Kevin from The Office says, we did it live on the podcast, Mitch and I. You know, you get 10,000-1 on anything, you take it. So put something in there. And I do mean it when we talked about this earlier, too. Like, I think Indiana is a team that is kind of laying in the weeds in the Eastern Conference. Yeah, I really, and there's the Clipper tie, right? But Vija Zubac is a really underrated center with what he does defensively, his ability to work on offense, too. You know, he's a low post threat. You can give it to him. He's got that nasty hook shot that works really well for him as well. And I think he's going to be a really good addition for them and an upgrade from what they were when they went to the NBA Finals. And I think you were looking at something for him. So I think those futures for sure. And then I'm going to sniff around this NBA Rookie of the Year market just because, you know, this looks deep and it looks like it's going to be more than just the three guys. You mentioned Caleb Wilson in Chicago. He looks good. Some of these rookies in the summer league when I was out there look absolutely tremendous. I wouldn't be surprised. We have like 5 guys that are up for the award by the time we get to near the end of the year. So I think that means you can hold off and hunt around for some odds as the season goes along. But those are the ones for sure that I'm buying in on.
I don't think I know this as much as I've talked to you. The NFL, as we switch gears here to football, what is your most contrarian take where you're higher on this team than everybody else or you're lower on this team than everybody else? Is there that team for you?
I don't know. I don't think so. I'll do this. So I was on with our friends from the Sports Gambling Podcast the other day because they wanted me on for the Colts preview. And I will say that I don't understand the market's pricing for Indianapolis at all. And I've heard some positive things about Indy, but I don't get it like in any way, shape or form. Obviously the big like elephant in the room is Daniel Jones. I don't know if he's going to be fully healthy by the time you get to week 1. And when I say fully healthy, I expect him to start, but is he going to be able to do the things that you need him to do? You know, like you go back to when Kirk Cousins tore his Achilles and he was lining up in pistol because he just could not go from under center to handing the ball off in some of those situations. Can Daniel Jones do that? Will he be healthy? Will he be able to extend plays with his legs? You know, he wasn't running for hundreds of yards, but the athleticism is part of his game. So if he's not 100% healthy, what does that look like? And Will, I don't think people understand this either. He was regressing, Daniel Jones, before he got hurt. Like, he was not playing very well. He was putting the ball in danger. He was fumbling the football. He was throwing interceptable passes. They just weren't turning into turnovers. You look at the advanced metrics for him in the last 4 or 5 starts of the season, and he was heading south. And I think a lot of people got really wrapped up in the 7-1, 8-1 start that they had and were really willing to ignore some of the dangerous signs for him. You look at the Colts defensively, they lost Kwity Paye. They don't really have any edge rushers at all that they trust. Laiatu is a guy that they're really hoping buys in. I know that there's some guys that, you know, you can make the case they're going to be strong, like C.J. Allen, they draft out of Georgia. Hopefully he's good at middle linebacker. They have DeForest Buckner in the middle too. And then if Charvarius Ward comes back for injury at corner across from Sauce Gardner, like there's some upside there. but I don't think they're a good pass rush team. I think Daniel Jones isn't particularly great, and I'm kind of surprised that they're priced where they're at. So I like them. Fourth place in the AFC South is like plus 260, plus 270. I think that's worth looking at. You know, there's some unique markets too. Teams to have more wins than, like the Raiders are plus nearly 3-1 to have more wins than the Colts. I think that's perfectly plausible. So there's a lot of different ways, but I think that's the team that sticks out to me. When I look at the way the Colts are priced, I'm very surprised the way that it is.
Do you have a sleeper team? I know some people like, a lot of people like the Saints, almost too many people. I might prefer the Falcons there. The Titans, you know, they get Dable at offensive coordinator. You got a quarterback that you know, might have some ability. I know they've just been burning your money if you've been betting them the past couple of years. But do you have a team? There's always that worst to first, or usually that worst to first in the NFL. Do you have a team that you think could make a leap there, which obviously matters not only in terms of the teams, but, you know, coach of the year, that's usually the profile of who wins that award. Give me a thought or two on that market.
I mean, you hit it. I'll go to the NFC South, but it's not New Orleans. I think Atlanta is the team. You know, it's funny. Betting market, sharps, all this kind of stuff. Been waiting for forever for this Atlanta team to hit, right? We talked about the positions and the skill positions and how talented they are, and they just need to put it together on offense. I remember the Desmond Ridder-led Falcons were like a hot preseason item at one point before that whole thing fell apart. But they now have Kevin Stefanski, who I'm a really big believer in. And you just look at the situation, because I expect, I don't know about you, I expect that Tua is going to be the guy. I think that he's going to win that job. And then you look at it, I mean, as poor as the season went for Tua last season, he is still a guy that was on the fringe of multiple MVP races, that when he is in an offense that is controlled the way that Mike McDaniel did at times, he plays at an extremely high level, good distributor of the football. He's now playing indoors, which is really going to be helpful for him. He's in a division that when you get into those winter months, you're going to Tampa and you're going to Carolina and you're going to a dome in New Orleans, as opposed to having to go to these winter environments like we know that he has trouble with in Buffalo and New England, New York as well. So I think all of those things really set up in a, you know, relatively average division, that team's going to be very, very dangerous. So I like them. You know, if you want to bet them to win the division, they're about 4-1, which I think is crazy in that division, because I don't think there's that much separating all of them. I bet Tua at 150-1 to win MVP as well. Stefanski to win coach of the year too. But I just, the whole point is, I think they're really undervalued. I think they're going to be a really dangerous team.
Yeah, and Stefanski, if he ever won that award, that would be three times, I think, since COVID, because he won it the COVID year 2020 when I actually had him. Then he had it a couple years ago, the year out of nowhere, where I believe he barely edged over D'Amico Ryans, and Flacco won comeback player of the year. Browns did well in the awards. And so this would be, you know, three times in 6 or 7 years. But I'm with you. It's not a division where you need 12, 13 wins, you wouldn't think. You can win it with maybe, who knows, 9, 10, 11.
And, won it with 8 last year.
Won it with 8 last year. It's a good point. So, yeah, I don't think that's crazy, and I've told this story before, but I had them. It was Thanksgiving last year, Thanksgiving week, and I was having a good week betting college basketball. Otherwise, I probably wouldn't have done it. But Atlanta was like 125-1 to win the division, and they needed to win out. They needed a bunch of help. They lose immediately to the Jets, a game they never should have lost. They blew it late. Yep. And after that, everything broke their way. Everything they won, all these other teams lost, and it's not a bad beat because it happens right away. And you know, at that price, you don't expect to win it. But it's funny how close they end up coming. I know new quarterback and lots of different things. But we will come back with JVT. We'll wrap up. We'll get his more thoughts on the NFL. If he has any, we'll transition over to college football. VSiN, the Sports Betting Network, should have bit more podcasts. Remember, this podcast drops every Monday, Wednesday, Friday, 6 a.m. Eastern, wherever you get your podcast. So coming back with JVT, Money Moves, Pod to the Future. Stay with us. All right, we're back. Wrapping up JVT, Money Moves, Pod to the Future. All right, JVT, anything else NFL you want to touch on before we switch over to college football?
Yeah, I think you hit on another team. Titans, I think, are going to be pretty good. You know, betting them to finish like third in the division or over on some win totals. I'm a big Cam Ward guy. I don't know if you saw the clip on Twitter, but I really bought in. I think it was the quarterback doc or whatever it was, but yes, they win a game and he comes off the field and tells them all that they were ass. Like, I love that, man. I love the fire. I love the competition. I think he's going to be good with Dable. Dable's obviously been a hand in developing guys like Josh Allen. So I'm really in on what Cam Ward and the Titans are going to be, especially with Salah there running that defense, which should be much improved and was already pretty good last year. Like, just didn't have an offense to support him. So I think the Titans are going to be a pretty dangerous group in a division that too is, I think, like, NFC South 2.0, right? I think it's generally better than the NFC South, but I also think that any of these teams can kind of win it, even though I just talked crap about the Colts. I mean, you know, they're all kind of in the same nexus with each other. So I would watch out for the Tennessee Titans for sure. I'm really big on what they're going to be.
You mentioned Tua for MVP. Any, and Stefanski, you mentioned some of the Falcons guys for these awards. Any other awards bets you've added, you bet, or you're looking at? Or give me a thought or two here on some awards. I know those are markets you're always looking at, and Mitch Moss on Pods of the Futures, you're always analyzing these markets.
So there's a couple. Is it Jacob Rodriguez, right? The linebacker out of Texas Tech. We've got him at about 25-1 to win Defensive Rookie of the Year. I think that's worth looking at. You know, much like Schlesinger last year, you know, we hit that with Cleveland at about 18-1. Just a guy that might just be able to rack up tackles, play a bunch of snaps, and really just lead in some counting stats. That's, I think, going to put you in a position to potentially win that award. I'll get your thoughts on this because this is your team. You go back to the years with Kyler Murray in Arizona, especially when he had DeAndre Hopkins, like he had tunnel vision. He just peppered Hopkins with target after target after target. And I think that's going to be Justin Jefferson. And so I could see a situation where Jefferson's going to get a boatload of targets and have a lot of good production. I don't know if they're going to be good, but I think I could see a scenario in which you're talking about well over 100 receptions, you know, 14-ish 100 yards and a big offensive season. He's in the range of like 15-1 to an offensive player of the year, I believe. But Justin Jefferson, I think, is going to have a really big year. And I thought that was worth looking at, too.
Last one on NFL. I think I brought this up the other day to Dustin Sweetelson when I had him on. Very rarely, and I really can't remember when I say rarely, I don't remember the last time this has happened, where you can say the defending Super Bowl champion is almost like a sleeper. I haven't heard anyone talk about Seattle. Everyone's just like, all right, yeah, good year, kind of out of nowhere. Maybe it's a little like, you know, the Blue Jays who almost won the World Series. It was a one-off, and then you go back to normal. Man, you hear a lot of, you know, well, the Rams, they could have beaten them. The Rams, you know, had to beat that Thursday night game, which they did. The Rams get Myles Garrett. I can't remember a defending Super Bowl champion with this little hype. I'm not saying I bet them, or I'm not saying it's not justified, but 11-1 to win the whole thing. What's your take on Seattle, and are they being slept on here?
Yeah, I mean, I think you are to an extent. Excuse me. I think a lot of people still doubt Darnold and I think there's good reason to an extent, right? Darnold put together two really strong seasons consecutively. But if you look from about the first time they played the Rams to the end of the season, he was kind of treading water. He had a dead even touchdown to interception ratio. He was playing pretty average football. And then he even said it, right? He didn't even play that well in the Super Bowl or throughout the postseason. Like, that was just a really well-balanced team. They were good on offense. They were great on special teams. They were incredible on defense. And so I can at least see a situation where with Kubiak gone and a play caller that's not there to maximize Darnold the way that he has been in the past, that you at least would look somewhere else. But everything else should remain the same. Like, they're going to be a great defensive team. They're going to be an elite special teams unit. And I think offensively, they're at the very least going to be an above average group that's going to be good enough. But I can at least understand why people aren't really running to back them. And I'm really curious to see what Darnold looks like without Kubiak.
All right, college football, I'll give you the floor. Two or three bets that you really like above all else, and how many bets in college football have you made so far?
Yeah, I've got about like five or so, I think. So the ones I like really a lot, we'll go first off to my bread and butter. I wrote up two conferences for the College Football Guide. I wrote up Mountain West and I wrote up the SEC. In the Mountain West, Hawaii is about like 6-1 to win the Mountain West. I think they're going to be very, very good. Sophomore quarterback Micah Alejado is back. For those who don't remember, he injured his ankle week one against Stanford. Might have been week zero, but the first game of the year. Never really fully recovered. Missed a couple of starts after that. It was Portland State and I think Sam Houston, if I remember correctly. And ultimately, never really was the same, but still, Will completed over 66% of his passes, was really, really good. He was named preseason All-Mountain West Offensive Player of the Year at Media Days, and I think they're going to be really, really good. And the cool thing for them, you know, schedule works out for them. They do have to take on the big boys in the conference, New Mexico, UNLV, and North Dakota State, but all three of them have to go to Hawaii. So that is going to be a really big feather in the cap. They get to host all of the teams that they're going to be in contention with for that conference. So I think they're going to make the most of it. I think they're going to win a lot of games, and I think they're going to win that conference. So at 6-1, especially from a value standpoint, because, you know, in writing up the Mountain West, I found that the teams at the top, I think, are a little bit more flawed than the market really believes. You know, UNLV, they've had this run of quarterback success, and they're hoping that former five-star quarterback Jackson Arnold is going to be the guy. I just don't know if that's going to be the case. North Dakota State lost a ton of talent in the transfer portal, and they didn't recoup it. They didn't at all. They only have, in their class for 2026, they brought in 29 guys. Will, only three of them played at a Power 5 level. One of them's a punter. So, like, they're really banking on just this freshman development, young guys kind of a deal. And I don't know if they're in transitions over to the Mountain West. So I think that's going to be really unique. And New Mexico Last year, when they were the favorite, they closed as a favorite in six games. They were 3-3 straight up. They were 1-5 against the spread. They didn't deal well with a lot of expectation. And now they're the favorite to win the conference. And I just don't know if that translates overall. And some questions at quarterback. So opens the door for Hawaii. So that's one. I would say the other one that I really like, that's Gunnar Stockton to win the Heisman at 20-1 for Georgia. I think Georgia's going to be really good. They have a revamped offensive line. The question is their pass rush going to recover? They only had 20 sacks last year, and the kid they brought in from Auburn to supplement some of that, he tore his ACL in the spring, so they're going to have some issues there. But everything else is stacked and loaded and ready to go. Running game's going to be good. Stockton was awesome in the fourth quarters of last year, and they have a favorable schedule too. So Stockton 20-1 to win the Heisman, and then Alabama plus 850 to win the SEC. This is all about Keelan Russell and whether or not he's going to hit, but I think Kalen DeBoer has a very good track record of developing quarterbacks. Their defense was awesome. They're bringing about 7 or 8 starters back on that defense, so they're going to be really good. Schedule's pretty favorable, too. They don't run into any big landmines on the road outside of playing Georgia, and they get to host them, if I remember correctly. So I think this Alabama team is going to be very underrated. You talk about teams that are flying under the radar, and I think it's them. They were picked to finish 6th in the SEC by the media, and I think if Russell hits, which is a good chance, I think they're going to surprise a lot of people. So those three for sure.
Yeah, and Alabama made the playoffs last year and won a playoff game. For a lot of schools, you know, 90-something percent of the schools, that's a hell of a year. Alabama's not one of those 90% of the schools. So I know expectations have changed here, but look, it's a different landscape of college football. It's not just the 2, 3, 4 best teams get all the talent. It's a lot more spread out. Speaking of which, last year, Indiana at monster odds wins it all. And Miami, who they played in the title game, had monster odds. Doesn't mean it's going to happen every year and throw in Mendoza monster odds to win the Heisman. In terms of winning it all, Heisman is there, and you mentioned Stockton with Heisman. Is this just more of a chalk year? Is this going to be one of the 5 or 6 teams that we expect? Or when you look at odds to win the whole thing, is there a team down the board you're like, do you have a team among these that you like more than the other?
I don't know. I don't think so. I mean, I guess it's not even far down the board, but like, I just mentally, it doesn't vibe that I say Texas A&M could win it all, but like they could, right? They're a really good team defensively. They're great. Marcel Reed coming back at quarterback. We'll see what they're changing at offensive coordinator means for them. So that's a really big deal. But that's a little bit further down the board in a team that I think many people like, but it just like mentally would look weird if Texas A&M were to win a national championship in football because it doesn't really compute. But I think that's probably about the area that I would draw the line at. I do think it's going to be relatively top heavy there. But I'll say this because you mentioned Heisman. I would say for a super long shot at 80-1, because these things really do come through. I don't know about you, but I really like Jaron Kiave-Sangapulateli out there at Cal. That kid is really, really freaking good. Left-handed quarterback, but smooth as hell. And he's going to be an NFL guy. Like, I think he's going to be the first overall pick when he's eligible to come out for the NFL draft. He is pro-ready, and he is a big dude. They invested in the program. I think they're going to win quite a few games, and he is going to be a dude that is going to put up some monster numbers. I would not be surprised if he finds himself in contention for the Heisman for sure.
Can you say that name again?
Jaron Kiave-Sangapulateli.
Can you spell it?
No, that I can. I think it's like Jaron is J-A-R-O-N. Kiave is like K-E-A, like W-E, I think, or something like that. I can't really remember that part.
I've watched him. He is good. And I always love a lefty, too. I mean, we got a little bit with two of that. These, like, when I was growing up, there was Boomer Esiason. There was a few lefty quarterbacks. Yeah. Lefty quarterback has kind of fallen off, though. It's not as common as it used to be. JVT, I appreciate the time, man. Let our audience know where we can find you.
At me, JVT, up on socials. You mentioned them all, Money Moves, and the podcast, Pod to the Futures, Harvard Handicappers, ESPN Las Vegas.
All right, and I appreciate JVT joining us. Appreciate you guys listening. Rate, review, subscribe. We will be back Wednesday. Check us out there. See you Wednesday.